big show, and I've just maxed out the CPU, so the recording could be awful. We're here to discuss the big stories of the week in technology. It doesn't get bigger than this show. We've been... Righty took over last week and did a fantastic job, although we only posted an MP3. I don't know where the film went, but he didn't tell me. And also, we managed to get a Mac show up last week, barely, thanks to Paul Shadwell recording it all in Zurich, and Ken Ray and Paul Wheatley taking the piss out of me something rotten while I was sat in the hotel drinking. So, the Week in Tech. Now, this week, so far, I've had one insult via Twitter. Thank you, Sly Mother. He refused to give any donations to the Patreon thing unless I turned back into the nice person who was on Computer America a few years ago.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. A, if you want to give to Patreon, thank you ever so much. B, if you want to give constructive criticism to the show, you're more than welcome to, and it will be greatly received, absolutely. However, if you want to issue personal insults to me, you'll be told to piss off, okay? Don't get upset when I tell you, because I've given you fair warning that if you insult me, I'll tell you to piss off. So, Sly Mother, piss off! Au revoir.
You pay each your money, you takes your choice.
Well, he doesn't, or the other case, so there you go. Well,
yeah, exactly.
joining me to discuss the week in tech, what a panel. Starting us off, top left, it's the Street Machine, newly published dude.
Indeed.
How's the book sales going, boy?
They're selling. Still, I'm shocked. I'm surprised. I'm impressed.
That's brilliant, mate. Excellent. And your book is...
It is a very simple little guide to how to better take control of your digital life in general, you might say.
Right, you've got a log on, haven't you, at a British Tech Network?
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you, if it's a guide for helping your digital life, why don't you post a wee blog, a synopsis of what people can get from it on the Help blog? And then
That's a really nice idea.
And then I'll retweet it, and then they can get an idea of what they're buying before they buy it, and then you can put a link in there where they can buy it.
That sounds like a jolly good idea, I would say.
You're shit
at try it.
You're absolutely shit at marketing, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I do the writing stuff behind the scenes, and then when it comes to the marketing, that's where it all falls apart usually.
Batwench says your wife must be really lucky.
She likes to think she is, and I like to think that I'm very lucky for having her stay around for as long as she has already.
And you tell her constantly how lucky she is.
Naturally.
Just for having... See, I don't think... back when she's in Wales, or not in Wales, she's actually up in Cumbria, but she's Welsh. And I think she thinks you're sexy because of your Swedish voice, but I think your Swedish wife probably doesn't think you're sexy because of your Swedish voice.
Actually, my wife is from Japan.
Really?
Yeah.
So she does think you're sexy because of your Swedish voice?
I would like to hope so, at least.
I feel a Welsh-Swedish-Japanese fight going on. Does your wife know Kung Fu?
No, but
okay, that's Chinese.
She can cook up a mean meal at least, and that's all I ask.
Right, all right, out of tricks then. Brilliant, spot on, mate. Next to him, in a different position from normal.
I know.
Line one, no less. It's Righty Boy. Now, dude, I haven't listened to it because I haven't stopped. It's not a personal thing, but I hear you did a damn fine job last week.
It'll do, won't it?
Are you on a different mic or something? Because you sound like you're in the toilet, mate.
Ah, it's because my mic's over there, and there you go.
Yeah, slick host. Jesus Christ, dude. Did you do this last week?
You ruined me. That's it. I'm destroyed from last week. The thing is, it would have been hard work. He's off now. Look.
Oh, dude. You were awesome, apparently.
I was, apparently. But this week it's all gone to you know what.
I was there last week, and I can clearly say that, yes, last week was awesome.
There you go. It's because you're back at work, dude, isn't it? That's what it is.
It's been a hard week. It's been a really hard week. It's been international shout at Paul Day today. And
oh, really?
Yeah. That's what you get for being the boss. You've got to take the blame for everything that's not your fault, because you are the boss. Everyone says that you...
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a tough position, isn't it? But you did say you got a huge upgrade going on, isn't it?
Yes, we have, yeah. It's that time of year. All the students come back, all new systems going in. But yeah, we're on top of it.
Good lad.
People got money to spend, didn't they? That's
well done, mate. April, of course, yeah. Next to him, it's Sarah Jane. How you doing,
Hello.
Mrs?
Hello. I had the honour of being first last week.
You were line one, except there was no line one.
I was first being introduced. Paul was Fantastic.
And VI...
And that's never, ever happened in all the years I've been doing British Tech. I've never been first.
No, well, ladies first should have happened. My father will be so disappointed in me. Now, VIP at QPR, I hear.
Well, yes, Phil Parks was.
Well, I thought I hear you were VIP. You were, weren't you?
Well, yes, it was. It was an awful lot of fun.
Was there a victory?
Eventually, yes.
I remember Phil Parks. I got the 1977 Panini cards up in the loft, which is like a it's like a collector's book of cigarette cards, and I've got 1977, and Phil Parks is in it.
That was a good time.
It was a great time.
We were a great awesome team.
Jerry Francis was playing there as well then.
Yep. Stan Bowles, Don Givens.
Yeah, and after that, they got the false pitch thing.
they were the first ones to do that.
And it all went horribly wrong after the AstroTurf.
Yes.
I'm glad you had a good time, though, Mrs.
It Ball, was, then. And eventually we won. Eventually. In the 90th minute. So.
And last but by no means least, it's Chris Ashley, who I owe an enormous frigging apology to.
I was wondering if I was going to get an apology on the show.
Oh, this
dude,
is
what's
all this about then?
Well, Chris came on and was an absolute star on the Pocket Show. And Paul Wheatley wrote to me and said, Chris has got to come on the big show. He's brilliant. I said, yes, he is, definitely. So I gave him an invite. And then when I set all the names out to Righty last week, because I was in deep pub and couldn't do the show, I forgot Chris's name. And Chris is sat there going, holy crap, there's no BTN line to dial in on. I'm sorry, mate.
So that's your perspective. My perspective is like, man, I had a great time on the Pocket Show. And wow, they want me to come on another show. I'll talk tech with anybody. I'll talk tech with the mailman, and he didn't even care. And I was like, okay, we're going to tell all my friends, you know, you got to get all the family.
Oh, did you have friends
in.
Watching?
Like, cricket. I was like, oh, I guess they just don't like me anymore. I'm just here twiddling thumbs, but no, it's all good. I know things happen. I'm a pretty laid back guy, so it's no big deal. Don't even worry about it or think twice about it, my friend. Thank you for having me, guys.
We'll have you on no problem at all, mate. Just to put this in context, I want to read you a chain of tweets, DMs from Paul Wheatley that just kind of put this completely into the context of things. Apologies. Separately, I want to suggest that in terms of getting folks on the show, do you remember the document that we had ages ago that you... updated before the shows, as in I didn't. Do you want to bring it back? If we can, we can lighten the load on getting folks on the show, particularly perhaps the big show. E.g., if I can get someone on, then I will. Just thinking this morning that we could get loads of other people on. I'm happy to reach out to people and think if we can get them in the dock and can share it with you, me and Righty, and we, in inverted commas, can update it. As long as someone... brackets, not thinking of anyone in particular, checks it before we actually run the final panel. That's me and bookings, mate, in a synopsis. So please, I am so sorry to have overpassed you last week, mate, but
I'm happy to be here this week.
We're done. The apologies are over. The week in tech, what's been going on? Well, there's been tons of stuff. And one of the big stories that actually broke this morning was that we'll start off with, I guess, and everyone feel free to jump in here, is there was big discussions sort of 2-3 days ago that the tech bubble was about to burst and shares were going to go horrific. But good old Facebook has turned in revenues. Now, it's only revenues, it's not profit, but they've turned in revenues of $2.5 billion. And I think they bought Oculus Rift in this quarter, so they ain't going to make a profit on that. And also, Apple have turned in ridiculous profits at something like $45 billion, and they've downgraded all their shares now. So instead of having a $500 share, you're going to have 5 shares or 6 shares at $70 instead. The tech bubble's going to burst, but then these things come out. Discuss.
Well, it can burst, but it can burst in a good way as opposed to a bad way, right? I mean, I find it completely amazing that, you know, when Facebook jumped out there, what were they, $42, $43 a share jumped up, and then they just completely tanked down to $20, $19. And now these guys are just out there completely handling business. So my hat's off to them.
That was the IPO, wasn't it, Chris?
Yeah. You know, I had a chance to get in and I didn't. And now I'm kicking myself. So, but, you know, it's I just like to see the fact that somebody else can challenge Google when it comes to advertising and making money around advertising. Google complains that Facebook is a closed garden, but it's so far it's served them well. The fact that they went out and spent that money on Oculus Rift, and then they went out and bought WhatsApp, you know, they're not stopping or showing any signs of stopping either. And I'm quite excited for what could potentially happen between WhatsApp and Facebook. And, you know, if WhatsApp adds phone calling in there, and then you might see some desktop capabilities from Facebook, and then the ability to incorporate user communications between your Facebook friends and your WhatsApp friends, because I'm a heavy WhatsApp user. I mean, the sky's the limit for these guys, and they're just showing no signs of stopping right now.
No, they made another acquisition today, didn't they? They bought Moves, which is the exercise app.
I missed that.
Yeah, Move, which is one of my favorite apps. It's one of the stories I'll bring, but I'll do it now. Moves is a really clever iOS app that works with the M7 on the iPhone, and it's really clever because it knows with the accelerometer and the M7, it knows when you're walking, when you're running, when you're cycling. And
you mentioned it a few weeks ago. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really good app, and they've bought it, and I'm kind of like, they're doing a lot of hoovering up of companies at the moment. But do I really want Facebook kind of knowing where I'm going? Because it tracks, obviously, not only tracks how many steps you take and where you run, but it tracks where you go. And with WhatsApp and all that sort of thing, what's their ultimate goal? Because obviously they've got these huge profits, but they're spending a lot of money as well.
Yeah, now, so here's the thing. I mean, I get the idea of WhatsApp because that's plainly just users and interoperability with other systems. So when you get the old... I mean, I tweeted out the other week, if you're a diehard Twitter user and someone's got I said this, 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 and this, and then it's got an fb.me/... you can guarantee that a diehard Twitter user isn't going to read it. And that's where the kind of dichotomy is going to come over the social media stuff. Oculus Rift, no idea what anyone was smoking that day. No clue. Because, I mean, they might do something fantastic with it, but it really doesn't seem like they're appropriate for them. The Move stuff, and now I said months and months, I said 2 years ago, Facebook is not tracking simple things, simple data, like... you look at Nike and it's in your cookies, and you buy a set of trainers from Amazon, and how long does a set of trainers take to run out? Because the number of miles that you run is probably directly equatable to the structure of the trainer. So Nike know how many miles a runner will run in a set of trainers. Sure. And if you've got the Nike app, and the Nike app is feeding back to Twitter, and the Nike app is feeding back to Facebook, or, here's the best bit, WhatsApp, and WhatsApp is now picking up and giving it back to Facebook, then they know when to start flooding your stream with adverts for new trainers.
Yeah, but now they know where I am, because, like, that's
Moves. It's all part of that, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And that's Moves, so it knows that I've done 16,000 steps today. If I scroll that way, it knows where I've been as well. So they're kind of the same way that Google Now tracks you. That's probably what Facebook are looking at, is the Google Now kind of thing. We know where you live. We know where you work. We know the kind of regular places that you go.
And sure. Let's be honest. I mean, information about consumers is where the money's at. Yeah. You have to know who they are, what they're doing, what they like, what they don't like. And even as when this thing is going to run out so we can replace it. You know, why do you think Amazon is getting into delivering groceries? You know, it's all of that stuff feeds habits, and habits feed information and opportunities to advertise to you. It is what it is.
Windrider's pointing out in the chat room that allegedly Facebook is promising to keep Moves as a standalone application and not integrate it into its own service. And I probably agree with that, because I don't see how that fits in, but they're going to leak the data off it. There's no question they're going to leak the data off it.
I think it's the users, isn't it? Sorry. It's always the users.
Go ahead, Street.
I just made a horrible realization, I think. I think Facebook is going to use the Oculus Rift system here to deliver a brand new experience to you. You come home, you put on your whatchamacallit Facebook goggles, and instantly you're in Facebook world or Facebook land or whatever you want to call it. And that's where they want you to spend your time after you're done working, so they can pump advertising more effectively into your eyeballs. And now Moves, they know where you've been. They can just like leech off of maybe Google, Street View data, create a real virtual world, upgrade it, make it look better. And that's the idea. That's a long-term solution. That's what Zuckerberg has been planning all this time. They want to build cyberspace and just like virtual reality and smack it into your face. I'm scared.
I actually kind of agree with you. Well, why would, that would be a complete advantage. They know who your friends are. So if there's other people in your friends that you communicate with and are using the same type of thing, why not? And they can control everything, the advertising and everything you see.
I don't know who my friends are.
I'm not walking into my house with anybody's Oculus Rift goggles on, that's for sure.
Will William Gibson house. Please pick up the white courtesy phone? William Gibson to the white courtesy phone, please.
just to put a sense of realism here. I mean, I'm not suggesting that what you guys are saying isn't true, but do we not honestly think that these companies, you know, and they're all pretty much the same in terms of looking for data, are just not sucking up opportunities of where there's data available at the moment before they even work out what they're going to do with it?
I think that's probably more than true, which is where the Oculus
Rift
is. That's
a lot of money for what-if scenarios, but,
you just floated on the stock market, Chris.
I don't dismiss that thought process either. I wouldn't dismiss that. But, what they spent on WhatsApp, I mean, but if you look and you see WhatsApp just reported, what, 500 million active users? I think they probably had a plan for WhatsApp. Oculus Rift, that might be more of a future potential. Okay, where is this thing headed to? So I tend to agree with that on some of the purchases that they've made.
WhatsApp is all about cross-posting, no question.
Yeah.
And I think they've got users there, and there's an awful lot of users. And a lot of my family who are on Facebook who don't exist on Twitter, and I'm a Twitter user through and through, I can't get to grips with Google Plus and Facebook, as most of the people who listen to this show know. There's no posts at all on Google Plus. It's definitely about the cross-posting process, but if you've got all those users, then fine. I think 16 billion is a bit pricey, I have to say. But, okay, it's your money. You spend it on what you want. Oculus Rift, no clue. No clue whatsoever, because unless they're thinking about turning that into a Google Glass at some point and taking the technology and miniaturizing it and sticking it on your existing spectacles, then, okay, fair enough, I get that. But to be honest, the smart play for money, well, they got it pretty cheap, I suppose, but the smart play for money would have been to say, right, I'm just going to get a Facebook app that integrates with Google, unless Google have already preempted and said, sorry, you ain't coming here.
I think this. My feeling is it's a bit like a monopoly board, the data at the moment.
Yeah.
And they're all grabbing what they can and thinking, okay, what are we going to do with it afterwards?
It's the first three laps of monopoly. It is. No, I think Sarah's exactly right there. It is the first three laps of monopoly. I want to know what everyone's doing. No frigging clue what I'm going to do with it, but I want it anyway. And I want it to be my data.
Because there may be opportunities for joining up bits of the jigsaw and buying that last property in the group
and putting hotels on it.
Then you can dominate that area. Yes, I think that's what it's about at the moment. But I think there will be more strategy involved once the dust settles and everybody knows what everybody's got, and then the bartering will start. Well, we'll give you this if you give us that type of thing.
Sure.
And then it'll be one big carve up.
Well, you can control the stage for virtual communication via Oculus Rift. You can control the texting communication via WhatsApp, because WhatsApp, I think their last numbers showed that they were passing communication on regular text messages. So if they can control and make it end game for text messaging, now you have virtual control, you have the text messaging control, and all you need is voice control. And you might be, Facebook might be doing some dominating things if they can have all three of those areas secured. Because if they get all their users into WhatsApp and messaging and make that the de facto method for messaging, it's pretty much game over for all the other messaging apps.
Dryder in the chat room is calling conspiracy already. He's saying Facebook is the Matrix.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only a matter of time. They'll be dragging us to the tanks and us up and everything.
There's the point. You see, I know I'm not living in tanks. See, I pinch, therefore I am. I know I'm not living in a tank. Batwench says, Sarah and Ewan, you might want to try and look at the link on the live stream page, because the BTN page still says that it's just Don't TV.
Just answered on that.
It doesn't, I don't think. Oh, it does. Okay.
It does at the moment. I'll talk to her about it afterwards.
If you're watching live on the live stream feed, don't go to Justin. We're on live stream. What the? Of course. I did tweet out, honest. Never mind.
For the benefit of people who want to know, what's going to happen is that each show will have a different stream, will therefore have a different URL, so we can't publish the link.
Yeah, we have to do events.
Like we have to do. Yeah, every show has to be a different event, so there'll be a different link for each show.
And also, Wirecast, which I thought was completely compatible with Livestream, apparently isn't, so I need to find the RTMP settings. So stick with us. It's teething troubles. We'll get there. We'll get there. But thank you very much for your donations, because they've paid for us to go with Livestream, which supposedly is ad-free broadcasting, apart from the fact I got a frigging Netflix advert before we started. So there will be questions asked after this show. Batwench has also said that she's found a problem with Hendrix gin because it's an opaque bottle. You can't see how much is left in it.
Oh, jeez.
Serious, serious issues. The Week in Tech, well, we've had a chat there about the bubble and that kind of stuff, which has generated an awful lot. I mean, Apple have gone and they've downgraded the shares now, so your Apple share is going to be worth $70, $75, something like that. We're going to do the Mac show tomorrow anyway, so I don't want to spend too long on it. I hate duplicating the content. But, I mean, a company taking its shares and saying, let's slash it up into several million more pieces. Is that a positive for the tech market or a negative? Or is that just a distractor from the fact that, well, actually, we haven't got anything new coming out, so we ought to just, you know, make a story out of the shares?
Yeah, I'm not much of a finances guy, but when you look at the fact that they're still making money, they slash it, get more investors in play instead of having to spend, you know, your entire paycheck to get one share. I think from an investor standpoint, it's a good thing. But man, the market has no love for what Apple is doing. You know, they want to see the next innovation. They want to see the next piece of tech. They want to see these guys keep driving up prices and keep driving up technology. And that's what's hurting them. And I think that's why why even though they're reporting great numbers, they're just not getting any type of a fair shake out there. They need the next iPhone.
I think you're on the money there, Chris. I think that's exactly it. Yeah. Jufro Jim in the chat room says, positive share thing makes it more affordable. I think that's a distractor. It's an absolute distractor. It's for the fact that they've done nothing innovative since iPad mini. Nothing. At all. It's been,
Even that wasn't, Ewan, because they were copying Google doing the Nexus 7.
Mac Pro is very innovative. It's hugely innovative. But the problem is it's so high-end that very few people can afford it. So in terms of the mass consumer market, the best thing they've done is iPad mini. And I'm going mini. Yeah. I'm not talking Retina mini.
I won't beat them up on copying, because that's what really happens, right? I mean, the iPhone wasn't a new phone. It was just a new way to use the phone. So, you know, give them a break. They took the iPad and the iPad mini, and they created this new genre of these tablets, if you will.
They're seminal, Chris. The iPhone was seminal. The iPad was seminal. The iPad mini is seminal. But the Mac Pro is not.
I disagree with you about the iPad mini. If you remember what happened when that came out, everyone said that they were going to bring out a mini because of the Nexus 7.
Okay, right. All right. So we'll say it's a reaction.
I agree with you on the iPhone and the iPad. Absolutely.
Okay,
fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah, the problem with the mini is it didn't change anything. So that's why I'm not going to give them that much credit for the mini, because it wasn't much different. It was just a lower priced, smaller version of what they are already dominating.
In which case, Chris.
But as long as you have Android eating everybody's lunch, they got to do something that makes everybody put Apple back on that pedestal. They're losing that pedestal.
In which case, Chris, if you go back to my point, what have they done since the iPad mini? Well, if you're saying I can't have the iPad mini now, which I'll take, I've got to go back to the iPad. What have they done since the iPad? Nothing. That's innovative. Oh, nothing.
No. Yeah, we agree there. Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
And the $70
share is a distractor from the fact that they've done absolutely nothing. I can feel the hate emails welling up as I speak. However,
yes, to you and me, Ewan.
Well, people can hate, but the truth is the truth. And even if they come out with the Apple TV, television set they come out with, I'm not even convinced that that's going to be so glorious that as to put them back in that same position that the iPad, the iPod, and the iPhone and put them in. You know what I mean? I don't think a TV can do it. So, and there may never be anything that they can do again. You know, we look at BlackBerry. Look how awesome they were and making money hand over fist. But they stopped innovating. They didn't come out with anything that was awesome and put them on a pedestal anymore. And they just tumbled. Yeah.
Like, that's the title of the show. Like.
So, but yeah, but it's nothing left. Well, I don't want to say there's nothing left. We don't know what it is yet. But yeah, I'm not going to give you the iPad Mini. But I agree with you that they haven't done anything since the iPad.
Well,
and, that's a problem.
I'm just in my corner, just a little bit. I'm going to quote Win Rider in a second, but he Gfro Jim says Apple have done nothing innovative, but they still make $40 billion. Fair point. And Win Rider says yes, but Apple didn't make the first tablet. They didn't make the first MP3 player. They didn't make the first smartphone. They made the first ones that worked on mass, and I think that's true. I think if you look at the a lot of the 7-inch tablets, they're a fair pale in comparison to what the iPad can actually do and the integration can do with it. And I'm a Windows Phone user, so you can't have me on that.
I mean, they made it better. You know, everybody likes to give Microsoft grief about, you know, they don't create technology, they take technology. But you know what? I'm a heavy Outlook user. I mean, you know, I use it every day. I love Outlook. And they made emailing better. They made word processing better with Word. It is what it is. You know, and Apple made MP3 music better. They made telephone calling better. They set the standard. So I agree with that. That piece of it is that, but they need that next thing that they're going to make better.
I hope they do. And I'm no Apple lover as everyone here knows, but I really wish that Apple would actually come up with the next great thing.
Mm-hmm. What stories did you bring with you then? Streak, start us off, mate.
Since we spend so much time in the present, I thought it would be nice to take a little bit of a look back to something that just passed its 25th birthday. It is, of course, the Nintendo Game Boy. On the 21st of April in the year 1989 in Japan, it was released.
Also,
it's kind of relating to our previous topic, the first portable game console with exchangeable cartridges, thus games, that worked en masse. There were some similar things before it, much more primitive, but this, the Game Boy, was the machine that really made it on the big market. And already 25 years.
Who owned a Game Boy?
Oh, yes.
I think it's easy to ask who never had a Game Boy.
I didn't have one. I never owned a Game Boy.
See, this is the best thing ever. Tetris machine. You would have been the only one answering. I can't believe you never had a Game Boy. I think I've had everything.
Chris liked me up until just then. Or maybe I'm overstretching, but...
How interesting is the Game Boy came out. It was very innovative at the time. It was better than the little soccer ones that you could do with the little stick figures. You know, the Game Boy took it to the next level. What can you say about the device?
Came out on April 21st, 1989 in North America, and in August 89, and in Europe it went on 28th of September 1990. So it was way after.
We got it way later.
Way later.
And we, on the other hand, compared to the Japanese market, we got Tetris as a bundled-in game. They got Super Mario Land when it was released. Tetris was somewhat more awesome, if you ask me.
Yeah, I loved Tetris when it first came out. But I have that gaming personality where, you know, a simple game like that, like, have you guys played that, 2024, the Gabriel Cerulo game on the web?
Ah, yes, I know which one you're talking about. They also released recently a homemade version of that for the Game Boy. So if you can load it onto an original Game Boy, you can play 2048 on your Game Boy.
What the hell was Yakuman?
A week I spent straight playing that game until I just had to.
Yakuman. You played Yakuman.
Yakuman, I've never played. What is that?
Apparently, it was a launch title that was only available in Japan.
It's a Mahjong title, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Streak, I bow to your greater knowledge. But Yakuman looks like a crap game, because only the Japanese played it. So.
Yeah, it's surprisingly common, I think, in these like huge bundles of games you can find on eBay nowadays.
Ask your wife. She'll know.
Yeah, most likely. I will.
All Japanese people know everything about Nintendo. That's what I've figured.
And one weird dork like me who knows way too much about the Game Boy, I would say.
I'm joking. If you're listening, Mrs. Streak, I do apologize.
But Tetris was kind of the success of the Game Boy, wasn't it? That was the title that did it because it bundled. Mm. It was so addictive, wasn't it? And I think, I've still got it on my phone. You know, I'm still playing it, you know, 25 years later. And it is, it's evolved over time, but it was that addictive title.
It's evolved over time. It's the same frigging game, dude. Don't make excuses for it.
Candy Crush isn't even different. I've got Blitz mode. I've got One Touch mode.
Bollocks.
You got the subscription-based version that EA came out with a few years ago, I think, for the iPhone.
It's Quasimodo with plastic surgery, and you know it, righty.
The bells,
absolutely. It's nothing more than the same game that there always was.
I'm just old.
Pretty much.
You can't pull the wool over this man's eyes. I'm not having it. Great story, mate. I couldn't believe that's that old. Unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable.
Quarter of a century.
Thanks, mate. How old are you?
I am soon moving up to my 31st birthday.
Jesus Christ.
My youngster.
I had a conversation with a bloke in a pub the other night, and I see him as my peer, and I said to him, how old are you, Ben? He said, I'm 25. I'm 28, rather, sorry. I said, you were born in 1989. And he said, yeah. I said, 85, rather. And he said, yeah. I said, George Michael had left Wham by then.
What a master.
Jesus.
That was the year I saw Springsteen at Wembley Stadium.
Do you shave yet? I saw Dire Straits live in an album that was number one for 2.5 years.
I know, scary, isn't it, Ewan?
Shit, I'm old. Righty, what have you got for us, boy?
Hello, mate.
Tell us the story.
Well, obviously, we're a couple of weeks past since XP ended support, and obviously the world's getting to grips with it. The world hasn't fallen apart just yet. But then I see a story saying that Windows 8.1, which is their latest operating system, isn't going to be supported anymore, which is a very odd thing. And Microsoft has taken the very odd stance that if you... Because obviously Windows 8 came out, then Windows 8.1, which is a free upgrade, and now there's Windows 8.1 upgrade 1, I think. And what Microsoft is saying now is if you do not, in the next 30 days, upgrade to Windows 8.1 upgrade 1, you will no longer receive security patches.
You're having a laugh.
No. It's on their blog. It's actually on the Microsoft TechNet blog. If you do not upgrade to 8.1 upgrade 1, you will no longer receive upgrades. Your system will cease to get updated. Now,
That's close to frigging criminal.
Yeah, there it is. That's the one.
How long's 8 been out?
About 4 months.
Well, that's very odd for Microsoft, who holds on to technology forever. Eons. He said, wow, I completely missed that story.
You've got to say that if you hold on to XP for this long, you'd figure you'd hold on to Windows 8 for a touch longer than this.
But no, that is it. If you do not upgrade, if you're a manual upgrader and you do not take the automatic upgrades, you will not be supported anymore. So it's really confusing because if you're someone, you know, obviously when the XP thing came out and they're going, you know, the best thing you can do is move to Windows 8, you will not be supported. Then they move to 8.1 and then they see all these stories going, you will not be supported. That's going to confuse the heck out of people.
Mm-hmm.
The timing is absolutely terrible.
It's awful.
As much as I love Microsoft, they are kings of confusing people. There's no doubt about that one.
If you think about it, there are people out there, and I'm not talking about us geeks. I'm talking about Joe Public that might have bought a PC from certain big retail store. I'm not going to mention their name. You know, in the early days of Windows 8, who've got no idea about doing this update. And suddenly, they've only had it for less than a year, and they find themselves that they're not getting any updates.
Yeah.
Mm. What the hell is going on?
Exactly. As long as they do update, but, you know, the 8.1 upgrade one was a pretty big update. It was almost a gig. And some people don't upgrade all the time. They don't know to upgrade. And suddenly, you know, the same way that people get bundled virus scan software with their PCs and then it runs out and they never realise they get viruses. If they don't get this update, they're not going to realise they're not getting updates. And obviously, like you're saying, a lot of you didn't realise that this was a story, but certainly the kind of non-tech folk are not going to realise. And if they don't update, they're pretty screwed.
I think the problem that you get with a lot of the media, and we saw this with the Heartbleed thing the other week, is they report what wants you to get the kind of the response rather than the informed view. And Heartbleed actually probably touched very few people in actuality, and there's still no evidence of the fact that any details were actually ever stolen and misused. And in the same way as this goes on, you know, XP's stopped being supported. That was reported on a lot of the mainstream media and done fairly well in terms of things like the BBC and so on. This kind of thing immediately afterwards is not going to provoke a proper and proportional response. And the average ma and pa out there who's bought a machine down at their local electronics store, got it home, fired it up, it's running Windows 8, they're actually sitting there going, I don't want to touch UI, if they even knew what UI meant in the first place. And they're sitting going, how do I get the start thing up? Where's the start thing with 8.0? And then they've got this idea of the fact that they've got to go to 8.1 update one, otherwise they are insecure, potentially. That's a horrific omission. There's no hiding from that. That's not good practice.
No, and it's not a rumor. It's coming directly from Microsoft, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But where did you say that was? I'm looking for that article.
It's. I'll put it in the chat room. It's actually on the TechNet blog from Microsoft in the chat room now. But I guess
it's... blog.technet.com.
When was it announced, Paul?
That blog was on
12:35 a.m. 12th of April.
There's nothing on the BBC site about it, given what we were saying. You were just saying, Ewan.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Please refer to the following update posts, blogs.windows.com/windows/B, springboard, etc., etc., etc. Update and WSUS availability and adjusted timeline. But they're removing support for 8. Unless you've got 8.1 update one.
So I guess it's them trying to get away from where they were with XP, though, isn't it?
I think it's an early preemptive shot of saying we don't want to get back to that situation where we're 13 years down the line and then removing support and people are upset. But 1 month afterwards, it's not the time to do it.
Well, it's for, well, like I say, the blog post.
Okay, so it's not for everyone. It's just for people who did a manual install of the update, because I think the Windows handles some of the updates differently. Where sometimes when you do manual update, I want to make sure I say this eloquently. Like I have one machine that I installed a different update version, like an MSDN version, so it doesn't necessarily get the store updates that says, "Hey, there's a new version of Windows." So I don't think this is going to affect the mass. I think it's only affecting a subset of folks. I'll have to read it more, but I'm just reading this one part. It's like, it very specifically says people who have done the manual update will have to update again to make sure they get up to 8.1.
I'm reading, Chris says that the servicing support baseline beginning with the May patch Tuesday, Windows 8.1 user device update without the update installed will no longer receive security updates. It doesn't say manual or otherwise.
Well, above that, it says what this means is those users who have elected to install updates manually will have 30 days to install 8.1 update. So it seems like they're targeting specific people. I'd have to research this because I'm glad you brought this to my attention because I haven't even heard this yet.
It is a thought. Is this a genuine advantage kind of trick?
It's kind of like that, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm just sitting thinking that if someone's got a fake copy of Windows 8.1, they'd have had to have done a manual process of update. In other words, they couldn't have gone through the auto update because genuine advantage would have caught them. Therefore, it's pulling out all the people who aren't part of genuine advantage.
That's a good point.
Because it says for those users who are still using Windows 8 and Windows 2012 and not Windows 8.1 and Windows 2012 R2, you are unaffected and will continue to receive updates as normal. So they're targeting a specific group of people who updated. Who might have updated like a test version or something.
Yeah.
They got to update to the 8.1 version to make sure that they continue to receive updates. It's very targeted.
I think this is a genuine advantage issue.
Yeah, but the thing that I picked up, obviously, in the industry that I work in, obviously, it's just say we'd move to Windows 8. We're on Windows 7 where I work. If we move to Windows 8, and we'd got this call running, rolling out to, I don't know, 5,000 PCs we've got in my organization, running the 8.1 update to everyone with 30 days notice would be huge. And
I don't think you guys would have, in that type of organization, would have did that manual update that they're talking about here. You guys would have probably followed your own update server procedures and had those machines update through the proper process. It seems like these are just like the one-off machines. So I understand the panic that was set in. Absolutely. Because I work in enterprise as well. But, Microsoft's not silly. They know where their bread is buttered. Yeah. And, look how long they kept Exchange 2000 on board because of their customers. Look how long they kept XP on board because of their customers. So they're not going to out to piss off all their corporate customers. They're just not that silly.
No, I'm going
to do that.
Go ahead, Sarah. Sorry.
If they're going to do that, Chris, they'd probably start making the same noises about Windows 7.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Good point. No, I think this is an advantage issue. I think this is definitely about copyright.
Stand down.
I called it. Did I get something right? No.
Yeah. But you guys listening, if you fall into that category, you better get your machine up to date. Otherwise, you're going to be sitting back.
And not manually. Because it'll just repeat.
So there you go. That's a great story.
Yeah, good one, Paul. Thank you. Sarah, what did you bring?
Well, that made me pretty angry, and this made me even more angry.
Oh, no, here we go.
Did you guys see that tweet I sent out earlier on?
Girl on a rant. Mm-hmm. No, I was...
The title of the tweet was, "This is why the one country, in brackets, even the US, should not control the internet."
Well,
the US government are proposing new rules on net neutrality, which would allow companies like Netflix and whatever to fast-track services and allow companies to control who gets what traffic and pay for prioritization. And this just is absolutely crazy. There's a story. It's a story on that came out at lunchtime. I've got the link on the BBC website.
Stick it in the dock.
I will do. I'm just putting it in the chat now. But when I read it, I just made me absolutely so angry. And
sure.
It's basically saying that it could carve up the internet so that in the same way that the cable industry was, so that you get some companies that are able to pay for prioritizing data. As I was saying, if you start doing things like that, then it just completely kills small businesses on the internet.
Sure, because if I'm a giant company making a ton of money, I can say I'm going to pay a little extra and I need faster connections from users to my data, as opposed to me who has a small blog. I can't afford that type of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy. And not to mention, if you run a business, you already do pay to have your people connect to your services. And as a consumer, I pay to have connection to the internet. So now I'm going to pay again based on whatever these cable providers and internet providers determine that requires an additional cost. This is absolute madness.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my thought too. It just made me so angry when I read it. The last bit is about the fact that the EU are trying to reinforce net neutrality, and it made me think, well, okay, if we can stop the US from doing this, because obviously they control the top nodes of the internet, maybe the EU ought to run the internet, give the control to them, because they're not one country, so they do tend to do things. Okay, we in the EU, we do tend to moan a lot about some of the things that they do that have an impact on all sorts of issues within certain countries, particularly the Western European countries, but this is the kind of thing they do actually do well. And maybe we ought to be, I mean, it's never going to happen. It's a pipe dream, but it would actually be really good if maybe we could move it to the EU.
I remember doing the Daily Show when it was Bagel Tech News. And I remember the election of or the appointment of Julius Czernikowski. And I said, he's a pro net neutrality bloke, and he's going to do loads and loads and loads of stuff for net neutrality while he's at the head of the FCC. He ain't going to last long. And sure enough, out he goes. And in comes this bloke, Tom Wheeler, who's allegedly doing complete and utter U-turn. There's a surprise. I mean,
apparently he came from one of the cable companies, didn't he? He used to work for one of the cable companies. And
what's the last thing a cable company wants? It absolutely is not net neutrality. Mm-hmm. America, I I have a hard problem with the idea of the fact there's a conspiracy theory going on here, but America is not oriented in its political system to anything other than supporting big business through lobbyists and through corporations supporting the end ethos of what it is that they want to achieve.
That's right.
And you take a specific body like the FCC, which is, I mean, it is crucial. It is utterly crucial to the freedom of a flow of information through the airwaves in and down pipes in the US. And you give it to someone who is a lapdog of the cable companies? Sorry. That is not the way to do business, but it is the way that you apparently do business in the States.
Which is why I don't think the US should have control of the internet.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to get any better if you go anywhere else. You will always get lobbying will follow.
You'll get the money. Yeah. Money will come to get what they want. And it should, you know, it probably should be just left out altogether. But the FCC pisses me off because they want to go after people for words and how you say this and how you say that. But, you know, something that actually benefits the people, whereas the free flow, as you put it, and the freedom of information, because look at the times we're in now. You have people out there or these politicians that can't get away with nothing. They're not getting away with nothing because as soon as they do it, it's on the internet. And then people can act, read, educate themselves, and you're not getting nothing past them either. And so what better end game for them would it be to kind of control and start their moves into controlling this free flow of information? And the sad thing about it is once it's gone, it ain't coming back.
Yeah.
They never take something away and it's like, oh, okay, we'll give you a little bit back. It doesn't happen like that. It's gone. It's gone. So whatever we need to do to step up to make sure this doesn't happen, it needs to be done.
There's nothing you can do.
We need to move on to internet version 2.
See, this is the point. You sit and elect a government, and the government elects the officials, and you think that you can elect the government that's going to elect the officials that you want, Chris, but you can't because you elect the government, and the government is not controlled by the electorate. The government is controlled by the corporations who lobby, and the corporations who lobby will then elect the officials who administer, and the electors. The administration of the process is the thing that is the problem. And if you don't, go back to Yes Minister on Google or on YouTube or something like that and watch Yes Minister. And what runs British government is not the elected officials, it's the civil servants behind it. Plain and simple. And unfortunately in America, the civil servants are not the civil servants, they're the lobbyists who then control the government. And that is the entire issue.
I really wish I could stand in the room while one of these senators are about to sign this bill that says they're going to allow the carriers to control the flow of internet traffic. And just, you know, I just want to watch them sign it in front of me so I can be like, you know, this is why I voted for you.
Are you sure?
You think this is what I want? You know what I mean? Plus, you know, being a big guy works to my advantage in that type of scenario as well. But still. You know, it's amazing these folks can easily sign these things away, and they know it has nothing to do with the people that they elected there. It's about staying in office, and that's why I can't stand the fact that we have career politicians. I hate it.
Yeah, I agree. Same in this country, Chris, as well.
But I think it's the same in most countries, sadly. Yeah. At least it's starting to become. If it isn't,
the people you elect are a distractor to the administration of government entirely. Mm. No question.
I mean, it is really just one of the worst nightmares I can imagine. As I see it, the internet is one of the best things we humans have managed to come up with, possibly ever. No, it's not freedom, definitely on the top 10 list.
Freedom of speech, certainly.
Absolutely, and freedom to exchange our thoughts on a global basis. I mean, that has never really happened before, and if you can kind of say it has, but not in the speed that we can do via the internet. Mm-hmm. If we dismantle this actually most wonderful thing, we're going backwards in time. It's just insanity on a grand level. I mean, turning it into cable TV is just the dumbest thing you can imagine. I mean, we have all this amazing stuff.
Hang on a second. Let's just be really clear here. We've got the internet, which is this fantastic thing for freedom of information and free flow of information. What's it used for mostly?
Silly cat pictures and awful YouTube videos, most likely.
It's porn.
That too.
Yeah. True. you're talking about 90% of the consumption of bits that there are out on the internet is porn-based. So then you go from that and you say, what else is beyond that? I'm serious. And I go beyond that and I say, what else is it? And then it's silly cat videos, which is like 2%. And then it's frigging chain letters that are on Twitter about the fact that someone lost a cat, here's the picture, please do the right thing. Or someone's got a Just Giving profile thing that's spurious and goes off to somewhere completely different. And Twitter is now an abomination of chain letters. And then you go to the fact that actually what's going on mostly on the internet is absolutely no value whatsoever to the human nations whatsoever. Nothing at all. Nothing.
But you know what? That doesn't matter, though. Because at the end of the day, if that stuff was happening and it was stifling the production of quality information, then I'd be like, okay, let's backtrack on the cat pictures, leave porn alone. But if you look at the fact that anything you want to know, you can pull up on the internet, you know, you're walking around with your cell phone. How many times have you sat and watched a movie? It's like, God, who is that actress? Let me figure that out real quick. Or you're driving down the road and you hear a song playing and you're like, oh man, what is this song? I really like it. And you pull out your phone and listen to the music.
It's fantastic.
That availability of information is the importance of the internet.
But here's the thing, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
The person is intelligent, but people are stupid. And
oh, yeah, sure.
People want to watch shit. The person wants to once in a while go to Wikipedia and find something about something, or go to a peer-reviewed journal and find something about something. That is 0.0000 and all the zeros you can think of, one of the use of the internet.
But the point is, Ewan, what does it matter? It's freedom of choice to do what we want. That's exactly the point in terms of making sure that we keep it that way.
So when we're talking about net neutrality and we're talking about keeping it open, we're talking about keeping it open for something which is barely used.
So but that's not the point. We, you know, we've got the freedom to use it exactly what we want. I might want to use it to research nuclear physics or whatever, but, you know, and the next person might want to use it just to look at porn. But that's our choice. That's the whole point, isn't it?
But, and you want to be able to exchange those ideas freely as well, because who's to say that, you know, if I want to look up what Ewan's thinking about on these particular topics,
you don't look what I'm thinking about.
Well, your traffic to Ewan's going to be slow, but if you want to look at the media who has a hand in the pot to stray thought process a certain way, yeah, come to our side. It's much faster where we can actually control what the information we're giving you. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It should be. And think, if you think about it, porn is a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Huge.
So I promise you that if this new way goes through, they're going to have traffic no problem, because they're going to be able to pay for the additional speed to their websites anyway. But the point is, and I agree, is that it doesn't matter. We want this information to be able to free flow, whether it be stuff that some people find to be repulsive, stuff that people find to be objectionable. It should all be out there. It should all be 100% accessible, because that's the basis of what the internet was and is.
I agree.
Is that ability to grab that information.
Huzzah, Chris Ashley. I could not agree more, mate.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
The reason why I said at the end of that thing when I introduced the story about the EU is because in the article that I got this from, it says Europe is currently fighting its own battle to enshrine the principles of net neutrality in law. At the beginning of the month, the European Parliament voted to restrict ISPs from charging services for faster network access. There's some more legislative hurdles to cross, but yet becomes law by the end of the year. So therefore, they're actually going in a completely opposite direction from where the US government are trying to do, where they're trying to control it.
I just want to point out that when we mentioned cats, I didn't pick the cat up and put him on the desk next to me. That is all. Hello, mate.
Here he is. He's back. Is that comic timing, or is that? It's
Harry's that is timing.
Perfect timing. That was good timing.
He's superb. I love you, buddy.
Yeah.
I say this: let us pay for the bandwidth we want and leave the bits flowing in the pipes alone.
Absolutely.
I couldn't agree more, but the problem is that the people that control the pipes know exactly what you do and don't want, and they want to throttle it to get the best effect from it. And I'm sitting looking, you know, I'm you know, everybody here is a cell phone subscriber, and they've got a cell phone option where they can share their internet connection. And in the UK, on the Three network, you can share it free of charge. And I'm getting 4G. Wow, 4G on my phone. I can share it with my laptops. 7.2 megabits a second. Thank you for all the extra money you're not charging me. Yeah. It's all about what they want to give you. It's not about what you are entitled to.
But we think a lot more freedoms here, Ewan, than they have in the US.
Oh, mate, you know, the American cost for internet is extortionate. It's despicable. I get unlimited internet, unlimited texts, unlimited calls on my cell phone, and I can share my internet connection from my cell phone for £15 a month. That's $20.
Yeah, I pay.
That is a perfect, Ewan, that is a perfect example of what the US are doing to the consumers over there, where it shows the freedom that we have comparatively over here, which is why we are better to control the internet than the US government.
Oh, that's a different conversation.
But I agree with what
those are mutually exclusive. The chat room.
No one should control it. It should be out there, much like everything else.
I do completely agree.
Some regulations, maybe, because, you know, with freedom comes responsibility. But I don't want anybody controlling it. I don't want anybody to be able to determine any of that stuff. You know,
GPS in your car, Chris, is controlled by the U.S. Navy.
Where it is today and where it should be are two different things, right? You know, I pay $105 a month for internet. I have 120 down and 25 up.
That's good.
But it's not bad. I pay extra because obviously I run a podcast out of here. It's craziness. You know, my cell phone bill for my wife and I is $137, and that's with a discount. You know, $137 a month for two phones, and that's 10 gigs of data.
This is the whole point. They are getting royally screwed in the US compared with us.
The views of Sarah Jane are entirely the views of Sarah Jane, not those of the network, and so on. Go on.
Hey, listen, Chris, I mean, I do completely agree with you. In a utopian world, I don't want anyone controlling it, but I certainly don't want the US government controlling it when they're being, as Ewan said, they're puppets.
I never said that. Don't stop me getting into the US next time I want to go to my world.
I told you I was angry about this.
Proposing net neutrality where they couldn't control any of this to now do whatever you want with it. It just floors me that in a few short weeks, it just went the complete opposite direction. Man, that is unbelievable.
I'll keep working on my mesh darknet.
Please.
Get a towel. Put a towel on your head.
I don't want anyone screwing with the internet. Apart from anything else, how on earth did we all meet?
Internet.
Indeed.
There we go. Yeah. Every bash that we have, everyone knows it through the internet. Chris, my cat's in front of you, but I'm going to give you full screen. It's your story, dude. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about something that's a little bit more innovative as far as what's going on there. And it revolves around Windows Phone. We had a conversation about this on SMR podcast 2 days ago. It's about the way Microsoft is handling the new hubs. I find it to be very interesting that what they did, because one of the things they came out with when it came to Windows Phone was they talked about how they had these hubs, which were repositories for information. And everybody loved the feature that loved it. You had the people hub where all your friends became people and all the information and things they were posting were in one location. Same thing with the pictures and photos that, you know, all the pictures were in one location, the photos, but they really changed the way the people hub was working. And I'm a guy that likes to read articles, but I love reading comments because the things that people say are just unbelievable sometimes. And you're just like, man, why do you even get out of bed if you're so miserable? But a lot of people are coming out against Microsoft's change. So to explain what the change was,
I was going to say, can you start off with what a Microsoft Hub is about?
What's that?
What's the principle of the Microsoft Hub?
Yeah. So the Hub is really a way to keep people out of apps and have the information bubble up to a higher level. So when you went to the People Hub, I could see my information coming in from my friends from Facebook. If somebody posted a new picture, it was in there. If somebody put in a new tweet, if I had Twitter connected, it would all the tweets would come in the same section. LinkedIn was in there as well. And without having to go into those individual applications, the information that I get from those applications were put into one screen. It was built into the phone. And oftentimes, I could go 6-7 months and never open up Facebook. And I'm a decent Facebook user, posting pictures to Facebook and posting information to Facebook because it was built into the phone. Well, they've since then decoupled that feature out of there. And the Facebook is now reliant on the app. And the Twitter connection is now reliant on the app, where that means that you have to install the Facebook piece to get the Facebook information into the hubs. But as much as I enjoyed using the hubs, this makes sense to me that they did that, because when Facebook comes out with an update and a new feature and Twitter, you can't expect Microsoft to update the OS as fast as applications update.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to hear your guys' take on this as well, because I find the move necessary, even though I love the way it worked before. And it's still, for all intents and purposes, you do get the information in the stream, but as soon as you click a Facebook link or you click a Twitter link, it launches the application, and then you go in and have to interact with it in the application. Especially you, and because you use a Windows phone. I'd be interested to hear you guys' take on basically phones changing core features, at the risk of pissing off their fans.
I mean, the point here from Gfro Jim in the chat room saying, like Chris says, you don't need apps to see all your local content. This is a one-stop process, effectively. Anyone?
Well, I hate to be the guy, but...
Oh, go on.
Sounds a little bit like WebOS back in the day. I keep coming back to that system, but it had a similar feature where it gathered all the stuff in one location. And you can see every conversation with like one person, no matter which network you used, was it Twitter, Facebook, Google, Exchange, whatever, like all gathered into one place. And this sounds an awful lot like it, but probably executed in a different, more modern, better way, perhaps.
How was that received on WebOS?
If memory serves, it was five people who actually loved this stuff.
I was one of them.
Yeah, I mean,
we loved it. But... WebOS was a fantastic system. Be fair, yeah. Street.
It was fantastic. It still is, I guess. But no,
had the possibility of being something really great.
Yeah.
Until HP got hold of it.
Yeah.
Hello, Leo Apotheker.
So what they did is they put an API in the hub now. So essentially, the app guys, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, they basically will now interact with the API instead to get the information. So you still, for all intents and purposes, if I pick up my phone and I look into the People Hub, all that information that I usually get from Twitter, Facebook, it's in that same line. You know, it's just a secondary part of it, the interaction, you know, or tweeting back out, which then requires to go into the app. But I'm okay with it, being a big, big time Windows Phone fan. But you know, Apple changed their user interface and people went ballistic. They flattened it out. You know, everybody was copying what they were doing. So why not flatten it out and do something different, in my opinion? But it just seems that, we get a little too far in our love for technology sometimes. And we don't see we tend not to see the bigger picture when it comes to these type of things and these type of changes, where we just get really caught up. Now, sometimes the changes are stupid. When BlackBerry came out with that clicking screen, I was like, I just don't get it. I didn't get it.
Yeah, nobody gets BlackBerry full stop, mate. I mean, it's not the screen thing. It's BlackBerry.
I mean, the biggest money they made in the last, year is when they went into real estate, basically, and sold lots of their old apartments.
Right. Sold off everything. Oh, we're making money hand over fist.
What
now.
The world really needs. So,
yeah, some technology. I do get the apprehension towards it, but sometimes you take a step back and you look at the bigger picture. But it just seems like every operating system goes through that one change where it makes more sense for the future. But in the immediate, people get pissed off, and it's just amazing to see how many people are just hating the new innovation. And I think it's great.
I've got a question.
This has always been the thing that's crippled Microsoft in the past, because they've had the large proportion of the market share, and therefore they've not been able to get accept the bad PR that doing that would actually take. It's something that Apple have always been able to make that big leap and leave things behind.
Jim in the chat room says, it does need updating. Don't see why they couldn't run patches. Would be good for app writers to allow hub updates. For example, the Facebook official app is allowed to update the hub. One of my questions is about the API, Chris. How accurate is the API and how frequent is the API? Because I know there's an awful lot of issues with the API and certainly with the SDK about accuracy of information that's grabbed, location information that's grabbed, usage of information.
So far in my usage of it, I haven't noticed any lag in the information that's coming in the stream. So, if I see something on my phone and I go on, you know, maybe I see a pop on my phone and I go to my desktop, it seems information is relatively recent. So I haven't noticed any kind of lag time there. Not to say it doesn't exist or it doesn't exist for some people, but it's just something that I haven't noticed.
Yeah. No, I know that there's an accuracy issue over the timer, isn't there? That's plus or minus 1 minute.
Sure.
Was it really?
Yeah. I mean, if you set a timer for 5 minutes, it's going to go off between 4 and 6 minutes.
Wow, that's interesting.
But that's in the SDK. That's one of the issues of the information update process.
Weird, but interesting.
It's not weird, it's shit. Let's not pussy around this. Excuse the fact that I'm referencing my cat who stood in front of Sarah now. There we go.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's cat.
Now, this cat and all the rest of them is brought to you by UKT. He's still in front of the logo. I don't know how he's doing that. Because I thought the logo was in front of me, but it's not, clearly. Thanks, Harry. UK2 are brilliant. They're absolutely fantastic. They support this network. They pick up all our bandwidth. They give us a server which has got unlimited storage. It's got unlimited bandwidth. And I mean, really unlimited. 40,000 people downloaded last week's Mac show. And I've got to say, why? Because it was awful. It was me in a hotel with absolutely no connectivity whatsoever, and Ken Ray and Paul Wheatley and Paul Shadwell just busting a gut every time they couldn't hear what I was saying. So, but thank you very much to those people who did download it. That server was provided by UK2. They give us everything. Sorry, Sarah. What?
No, it's all right.
It was a clap of applause, round of applause. Jolly good.
Okay.
You got your palm pre out and you were dusting the crap off it.
I was just thinking what a brick. You carry on, yeah.
UK2 are brilliant. Please support them. If you go to britishsetnetwork.com and click on the sponsors page, buy your domains, buy your co-location services, buy your hosting services, VPN, VPS, all of that kind of stuff comes from UK2. We would be lost without them because the server they give us is £400 a month, plain and simple. So please, please, please support them because they support us. I know a lot of people write every week saying how good the service is from them. They are brilliant. They are a really good company. Their whole process is really, really robust. And if you've got problems with a company and you go to them and you say, I've got a problem, if they fix it, that's the test. It's not whether they get it wrong in the first place. It's whether they put it right, and UK2 do. So please support them. And also, brand new logos kicking about, and if you go to the UK2 website, I made the video that's on there about their data center. That was me.
Oh, wow.
That was me. There you go. You know someone famous? No, you don't, but there you go. And the other people are the Network Union. Now, I'm going to say something about the Network Union, and there's a potential for the fact that British Telecom could get upset about it because I don't really know what I'm talking about. You should go and talk to the Network Union. Here's the thing. If you've got or are thinking of getting a BT business broadband service, then talk to the Network Union. The relationship between you and British Telecom isn't affected. So even if you've got an existing contract with them, it doesn't matter what the size is. You could be talking about the £55 per month BT broadband, whatever the service is. Or you could be talking about the fact you run an entire WAN and a huge, huge system. The Network Union are specialised in WAN. They can help you out. They can get people in there to support you. And you're going, well, yeah, hang on, but what am I paying BT for? This isn't an extra cost. Whatever you're paying already is going to stay the same. Your relationship with BT is going to stay the same. Your contract with them is direct with BT, and your payments to them are direct. What you're getting by just talking to the Network Union is an extra layer of support and expertise, and they will work with you to make sure you've got the right price and the right service and that it's tweaked to function exactly the way that you need. And you haven't paid anything extra for it. Why are you still listening to me? Why aren't you picking up the phone? Go on. Right, what you got to say?
I'm going to pick up the phone.
Good lad. Go to BritishTechNetwork.com, sponsors, Network Union are there. Check out the Network Union and send them your details. If you send them their email, your email, they don't do anything else other than contact you back with it. Isn't that innovative? Eh? A firm that just uses your email address to call you back. They don't keep it. They don't advertise it. They don't send it on to anywhere else. They promised us that, and they haven't yet. If you know different, tell us, and we'll say something to them. But I guarantee you won't. Check out the Network Union. They support us. You should support them. Right. It's time for the cool thing. Streak.
Yes,
you,
indeed.
Have you got out that's cool, boy?
It's pretty cool, I would say. Something I stumbled across just a day ago. I haven't had too much of a play with it because I'm not that much of a Google Chrome guy per se. But this one, I really had to fire up the old thing and try it out. It's called Project Naptha. I think I got it right, pronunciation-wise. And basically, you can edit or copy text from an image that you see in the web browser. And it does it all with some clever software from both Microsoft and Google. They built this little Chrome extension. And it really does some cool magic stuff. You can copy text out of an image just there. Boom. I am really impressed by what you can get for free these days. I mean, this is something that just plugs into your web browser. And you can do stuff that's, well, practically impossible just a few years ago.
So it's amazing. It's an OCR process, effectively. Mm-hmm. Any graphic that you've got that's captured in Chrome.
Give or take, yeah. I haven't tried it too much, but with what I've tried so far, it's worked pretty well, at least.
And it does it in multiple languages. You've got English, Spanish, Russian, French, Chinese, mm-hmm. simplified Chinese, which I'm hoping mm-hmm. is very simplified, Chinese mm-hmm. traditional, Japanese, or German.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Pretty nifty.
Excellent. French and Germans in the same sentence. No Swedish, unfortunately.
It's a small language. No. Globally spoken, not really.
No. But there you go. But spoken by you, mate.
Indeed. Ibland, i alla fall.
Oh, NLTAC.
Ooh, skål. Yes, please. Skål.
That's it. That's the end of my Swedish, by the way. Righty, what have you got for us, mate?
Hello, mate. Well, obviously, as well-publicised, I went to the Gadget Show last week, and I wanted a game to play on the way. I was going through the App Store and I just
You were found... with your mother. You should have been talking to your mother, not playing a game, young man.
Well, yeah, I know. And, well,
didn't get I've floored him. I've stopped him in his tracks.
Anyway.
Talk to your mother, boy. Timothy! Go on, right.
I was looking for a good game to play and I found it on the App Store and it's been there for a while, but I've given it a go and it's taken, like Streak was saying... Streak was saying about the Game Boy. Back to retro. Worms 3.
Oh, my boy love Worms.
Bloody Worms. God. I'll tell you what, it takes a little while to get used to the touch interface opposed to doing it on the cursor keys. But it really is just as much fun as it was playing on the Amiga back in the day. But what I love most about it is I've shown it to my daughter. And she loves it. And I just love the fact that I can go to my daughter and show all these retro games. And she absolutely loves them all. And you can napalm Worms and airstrikes and all that sort of thing. And it's just as good as you remember. The graphics are probably better than they were. But it's not...
I'm sure just... it sounds like Worms.
That's perfect. I wonder what was going on for a minute.
I'm playing enough to get us a copyright infringement. It's classic Worms. It's 2D platform where you jump over stuff and you sling stuff and you throw it and you get a bazooka and you fire it aimlessly and hit nothing. Piece of peace. Get out of here. Oh, is that a bleep I'm going to have to put in?
No.
It's a noisy piece of shit, isn't it? Jesus Christ.
When I was a student, we used to get so drunk and play this. And it's just great that one that is unbelievable.
When you were a student, I was 43 when you played this then. No, Ellis was playing this. He loves it. He loves Worms.
Yeah, and I just thought, you know, it's great that these old games are coming across to phones now, and that our kids are getting to play them as well, and they enjoy them as much as they do the Xbox games and the Xbox One games. They probably enjoy them even more because I think, you know, attention span with kids and all that sort of thing. They just love the games. And the fact that it was that fun for me when I was young, they find it as fun.
And they're charging you £2.99 for the privilege of remembering when you were young.
Ah, no, I pay 99p, Dave, for the character
show. Well, it's showing £2.99 for iPad, £2.99 for iPhone, and £2.99 for Mac on the website at the moment.
So I got a bargain then, didn't I?
Yeah, allegedly.
Good fun.
Good pick. Now, Worms is I like it. It's okay. It's fine. I'll play it. But Ellis is an absolute devotee of Worms, and you would get his vote for sure. Sarah is taking pictures with a Palm Pre that she can't actually manage to get off the phone afterwards.
Want a bet?
Yeah, you can't.
I was going to make this my
Bluetooth. The only way they're coming off. Good.
No, I'm going to tweet the pictures out later on just to prove I'm actually managed
shit.
To do it.
So oh shit!
Just to show I can actually do it. I think there is a micro USB port on here somewhere. So I was amazed. I went to grab it when you were talking about it off the shelf. Just sort of pressed the button, and there's still battery charging. I haven't used it for over a year or two.
Therein lies the point, Sarah.
Oh, jeez.
But I'll tell you what, it's wicked a brick. Battery. It's like going backwards to the 80s when we had the brick phone.
Is that your cool
it
thing?
It feels like a... No, it's not my cool thing. I did think about making it a retro... My new camera, as you know, because it still takes pictures.
But then you thought, no, 1.3 megapixels just doesn't cut it anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever. But yeah, no, I mean, I can use this as a camera. Cool.
In inverted commas.
No, I am going to make it my cool thing. That's my cool thing. My Palm Pre is my cool thing.
Because it started after 2.5 years on the shelf. That sounds like a Squeeze song.
You said it. No, it still works as a camera. So
picked up and started from the shelf.
See, camera. Camera. Still works. Totally I don't good. Know where you're going to get one from. Probably eBay if you want one, but... you can't buy them, obviously.
Or you can rob Sarah's house. Failing that, knock on the door and say, excuse me, can I have your Palm Pre? And she'll say, yeah, no worries.
Yeah.
What's your cool thing, for God's sake?
My Palm Pre camera.
No, it's not. You are not picking that as your cool thing, woman. I'm not having it.
Well, I thought it was worth a try.
Yeah, it was but it's not happening.
That was me, wasn't it? It was picking up the camera because I was showing it.
Have you still got an XDA too?
I tell you what, where I used to work, I did actually have one until a couple of years ago, and I made it work. I made use of it. So yes, I can't get it now, but I could have done if I was still working there. So maybe I could have done, but I've got a few other things hanging around there. I find a Nokia 6510 somewhere.
Good. They're good for you. Have you got a pick or what, mate?
Yes, I have.
You're stalling, aren't you?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I have got a cool thingy. And you're probably going to say when I said this, but you had this a few weeks ago, but I've got a different reason for picking it.
Okay.
It's a Android app called ES File Explorer, which I did do a few weeks ago for a reason about hotspots being disabled on the new version of Android, and you should do it because it gives you the feature in the app to do it. But I had a need to be able to access files elsewhere on our network at home from tablets, and I've been struggling to find ways of doing it. And I was playing around with the app the other day, and I found a way of doing it. And it's brilliant because it now means I can access stuff on the tablet that I couldn't previously access on our network through that thing without using a PC. And it's enabled me to do it. So it's my cool pick for yet another reason.
And it's free.
It is free. It's an awesome, awesome app.
ES File Explorer, File Manager, effectively. File Explorer, File Manager.
Yeah, it's called File Manager, sorry.
Play.google.com if you want to go and get it.
Yeah, I'll put the link in the chat room if anyone's interested. So,
if you've got an Android phone, there you go.
Yes, but if you haven't, well, you're dead.
Well.
Windows is okay, but if you've got an iPhone, well, you know. Different story.
And last but by no means least at all, Chris, what have you got for us as your cool thing?
I got a cool thing that is kind of in two parts. I don't know how you guys are getting on over there with the home automation, but it's starting to ramp up over here in the States. And I've gone with this product called Insteon. because it's more do it yourself as opposed to what our cable provider and our local carriers are trying to do, where you get these systems you put in and then you pay them an ongoing $9 a month to maintain it. Where Insteon, you can control your lights and control your fans and all that stuff remotely. But there's a really cool application on Windows Phone that allows you to do that control, which is called SnapSwitch. And it allows you to not only turn your lights on and off, dim your lights on and off, turn your fans in different levels. But the cool thing is it actually supports the Cortana. I actually put up a pretty cool video on YouTube where I told Cortana to dim my TV room light to 30%. And she goes ahead and dims the light for me. And that's all done because it supported voice commands.
Does that mean you've fallen in love with Cortana, Chris?
My wife already knew that she became second fiddle. Now it's my daughter, Cortana, then my wife. So unfortunately, yes, you know, she's awesome. But yeah, it was pretty cool. So if you guys are getting into home automation out there, because they definitely sell equipment for the UK style of the 220 volts out there. Check out Insteon products. And if you are looking on a Windows Phone device to control those devices remotely, then you need to take a look at SnapSwitch.
Good luck in the spare room this evening, mate. Well done.
Thank you, sir.
Excellent pick. Michael Thing, I'm going. I've got to say, I'm looking around wildly for something here, but when it comes down to it, I'm afraid I'm flaked for the first time ever. There's never been a big show where I haven't got a cool thing.
I've never known that, Mr. Rankin.
No, I can honestly say it's the first week I've ever, 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 ever flaked out. Actually, I have got one cool thing, and it's in my pocket. And it's thanks to Paul Wheatley. I have the Plantronics Bluetooth earphones. They're pretty cool. I bought these in the States when I was out for Macworld, and they're absolutely superb. They fit in the standard Bluetooth 4 connection. You can do up and down on the volume. They've got a microphone built into them. They charge off micro USB in the right-hand thingy only. The charge lasts about 2¾ hours of continuous play, so it's not too bad for such a small set of homes. But the one thing I will say is once they... And Chris, Paul did kind of warn me about this. When they run out, that's it. You can't plug anything into them to keep them going. They have to charge before they'll play. So if they run out of charge, you're knackered. You cannot add a bit to them while they're running. So you can't go corded after you've been uncorded, plain and simple. That's it. But they were $80. So I'm guessing you'll get those for about £80 here in the UK. And they're the Plantronics cordless Bluetooth earphones. They're beautiful. There you go. And they're in my pocket because I've used them all week, but I forgot to charge them. And they crapped out on the way down this morning. There you go.
Plantronics usually make pretty good quality stuff, so I assume the sound is pretty nice.
Oh, the sound is awesome. The sound is absolutely beautiful. Yeah. I cannot
quite say. Big fan of our headsets.
Absolutely nothing to do with it. It's the fact that it lasts for 2.5 hours. And then there's no way I can't plug anything in to keep them going. You've got to charge them up from that point. You can't do anything with them. Sorry, Sherry, go on.
I work from home, so I actually used to use a Plantronic headset every day because I've since gotten rid of my home phone and just used my cell phone. But I've since switched to the pick that I did on the Pocket Shell. So, but yeah, big fan of Plantronics and their headsets.
Sarah, you were saying?
I was going to say those headphones that Robert's using are Plantronics because I recognise them the same ones I've got in Ireland.
There you go. They're good. They're all right. And they are, says Robert.
Indeed. I just have to check now. I keep forgetting what I have on my head most of the time.
Yeah, I
forget what I have in my head too.
Same.
So my duck is not broken. I've managed to think of everything for every show so far as a cool thing.
Just
off till next week. Go on, Sarah.
I was going to say, I'm bloody determined to find I can't find the blooming cable for this Palm Pre now. I will find it before the evening's out.
Oh, dear. That's
if memory serves, shouldn't that be a USB to USB micro?
That's what I thought, but it looks slightly weird, so I've got to have a hunt around, see what I can find.
Okay. Oh, this is my new camera. Unless I can find the lead for it.
Well, there you go, Ewan. You're a photographer.
Not with that piece of shit. Where can we get a hold of you, Streak?
Just hop on over to streakmachine.com and you'll find all my online endeavours.
Jolly good, man. And don't forget to post something on the Help blog about your new book.
Will do.
You muppet. Righty, where are you, boy?
Hello, mate. Forums on Twitter, BritishTechNetwork.com, doing my reviews. And the Help blog is, like you say, to Streak, is up and running now.
Yes, it is. Right, you get to bed. You look knackered, boy.
Thanks. Cheers, mate. It's been a hard week.
I'll see you in the morning. Mrs., where are you? Struggling to get a Palm Pre to carry on working now. It's run out of power.
No, it's still, I can't believe it's still running, actually. I'm on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK and on other shows on this network.
Excellent. And where are you, Chris?
You can catch me writing blog posts on WinGadgetNews.com. But my favorite place to be is at the SMR podcast. That's our show. We record weekly Tuesday nights and try to publish by Wednesday. Three guys that are a lot of fun. It's where Allison met us doing that show. And a lot of fun. So check us out on the SMR podcast. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Big Chris Ashley.
And Chris and I'll be talking after the show about regular posting and how to achieve a schedule for regular posting and how to book guests on podcasts.
I got you.
Not my finest week. We'll be back again next week. I'm home on Thursday. I can guarantee I'm home because the work I've got booked is in Birmingham. Yay! So I'll be here and it'll be normal time, 8 p.m. No difference in time. And the Mac show will be at normal time because I'm home working in Birmingham on Friday. Yay! But tomorrow, Mac show is at 9 p.m. We've got a good bunch coming along, but we'll see you then. Thanks ever so much for sticking with us, Alaska Loics, with all the changes. Please make sure that you vote for us in Patreon, because patreon.com/British Tech Network is where you can give us just $1 a month, if you like. If you're saying these shows are worth 60 pence a month to you, give us that donation. And what you'll happen is you, A, support one of the best podcasting networks in Britain. Yes, that's us. And B, you actually get entered into a draw, and we've got a massive prize this month. My wife's cleared up the office because we had someone view the house yesterday to buy it, so I can't show you all the goodies that are in there. But go back a couple of weeks and you'll find all the goodies that are in there, all the crap and stuff. There's about 300 quid's worth. There's a load of stuff in there. You can only win that if you're a Patreon subscriber. So go to patreon.com/British Tech Network and subscribe to the podcast. Just give us something, a donation that says thanks very much for what you do for us, and we will enter you in the draw. We've got a fantastic draw this month, 300 quid's worth of stuff. Next month, we've got MacPaw, who are giving us six licenses to give away for their software, and also iSkelter will be giving us a prize. And iSkelter, of course, as you know, are the cool thing of the moment. They are absolutely beautiful. All the stuff made in bamboo. So sign up for patreon.com/British Tech Network and you'll be entered in that draw. And also, I'm getting close to 1,500 followers on Twitter. If I break 1,500 followers, as soon as I do, I'm going to buy one of your camera. There you go. I promise. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You can't win the camera, though, Chris. No, come with the shows and win the camera. It's not that.